right up top.
Yeah.
Welcome to Highway Diary, episode 144. My guest today, Mikey Swenson.
Oh, hello, everyone.
We got to kind of aim your voice
aim
this way.
Aim my voice this way?
Yeah.
All right, I'll turn my chair. Okay, cool. Police interview.
So I first met you. You were the co-creative director of the La Nuit. Things were fine. We were talking big plans.
We were.
And then about two months in, I got a call from you late at night.
Yep.
Man, I messed up, Eric, man. What's going on? Something happened, man.
Yeah.
I can't do your show tomorrow. So I was like, what is even going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And then I hear many days later some details start pouring in. So what exactly happened that night?
I got robbed while smoking crack in a drunken stupor in New Orleans at, I guess, what, it was like 4:30 in the morning. It was close, I guess it was late when I like started my drunken stupor, and then it ended, I guess, noon of next day with me kind of coming to in a dude's white Cadillac who I'm pretty sure was a crack dealer, who was actually relatively nice. He was a nice guy as far as I can remember. I remember waking... I'll tell the story. I've been kind of trying to work on it as a bit because it is really an interesting story. So I'm really drunk and I'm walking home. Me and Kelly had gotten into an argument. Kelly is my girlfriend, and she's the best. This was all me. You know, whatever was happening in our relationship was what it was, and I decided to put myself in a pretty dangerous situation obviously I have issues, I guess. I don't know. Who cares? I should.
But I guess, like, what I want to know is, like, what's going through your head when you're, like, I've never done crack with homeless people. Is it just, like...
The guy was not homeless. The guy was, like, a well-dressed, you know, guy. Looked like David Banner. And then
successful.
And you're I want some of that. I was walking down the street, and he had this nice white Cadillac, and we were, like, talking about, like, life and shit. And I was walking down the street, and, like, I don't know, we were talking for a little bit, and then he asked me if I wanted a ride. And I was like, yeah, I'm, like, four blocks straight down the street. Like, if you're, you know, going that way, just please drop me off.
Right.
So I get in the car, and I guess my judge of character was obviously impaired, because he bangs a right, and I'm like, nah, it's straight. And then he's like, nah, it's cool. And then I was like, ah, shit. Like, now I'm in a moving...
Right.
Kind of jail cell with this guy.
Right.
And then he pulls out a crack pipe. Or, I mean, it looked like crack. I've never done crack, and I've never smoked meth. I've never did any of that shit. And so it was either crack. I'm pretty sure it was crack, because I think meth would have been... I would have felt a lot more anxious, I guess. But, you know, I guess euphoric was a way of... I felt immediately after the crack, but then it's true. It goes away very quickly.
Right.
And it didn't actually blow my mind. It might have been because I was, like, so fucking drunk that it kind of got me back up to, like, whatever. I also just might not be into stimulants all that much.
Right.
But,
so if you came to in his car, did he rob you, too?
I have no idea, but it was, like, it wasn't, like, a rob thing where it was, like, you know, it was a gun in my face or, there's, like, 2 hours missing, and then my phone disappeared. And, okay, here's one of the funny parts of the story, is that I come home, you know, all fucked up. Kelly had been looking for me and, like, calling me.
Right.
And that's what I feel worst about how that all happened with her, how it all kind of, she was, like, looking for me all fucking night and morning, and then, I texted her, but I don't remember it, and it was, like, gibberish. So then she was like, okay, he's alive somewhere. She stopped looking. So I come home at, like, noon the next day. I end up having... I hopped the fence because I can't get in, and I didn't have my phone, which I was aware of.
Right.
But I had a BlackBerry. I was asking, because I remember, like, waking up in the car and being like, where the fuck is my phone? I need to go home, take me home and all this shit. And he like was like gave me like shrugged and tried to give me a BlackBerry that wouldn't turn on, which I ended up taking. I actually took it. Actually, I was like, well, if I got robbed of my actual phone, I might as well take this piece of shit from 2002.
I think the whole crack world is kind of like, leave a phone, take a phone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it might have not even been, he might have just assumed that it was like, we were like, it was like, oh, well, I don't know. I handled myself in a way that didn't get me, like, murdered. And right. Maybe the guy was, I was just really lucky that he was, like, a nice, not nice guy, but, you know, somebody that wasn't really out to, like, really fucking fuck my entire everything up, because he could have. I remember going, like, we were driving through, like, parts of New Orleans that, like, I saw in, like, you know, fucking documentaries about how horrible the crime was in New Orleans. Like, I remember, like, oh, I've fucking seen this crack house before on TV or something. So it's like, it was bad, man. It was like, I was in a really bad spot. But I remember, here's the funny part of the story is I walk inside to where we were staying. I go up and I find Kelly fucking turning over one of the rooms here at the B&B. And she looks at me like horrified because, like, I could only imagine what I looked like. And because I, you know, essentially left her to go smoke crack the night before. She had left. I went to a bar for like an hour by myself and got really fucking drunk after I was already really fucking drunk. But I come up there and she's like horrified and shit. And I remember I had taken my shoes off by the door of the room when I first got home here. And I go upstairs, she's horrified. And I come back downstairs like feeling, you know, like, okay, I should go to bed and this is really bad and deal with it when I wake up. And as I'm going into our room, I see some other guy's shoes that I've never seen before. And I was, like, pissed off because I was like, she fucking cheated on me. Like, I was out there smoking crack but being faithful to her. And she goes and cheats on me. And then so she comes down and I'm, like, yelling at her about the shoes. And she's like, I've never seen those shoes before in my life. And then I realized that I didn't have my shoes from the night before. So I had somehow switched shoes and phone, sneakers right. And cell phones in the hood.
In the crack world.
Disappear.
Well, it's kind of like a give and take.
But, yeah.
There's just a well of phones and shoes going around.
Exactly. So I had a BlackBerry, which was not my original, like, Samsung Galaxy whatever fucking thing. And then I had Levi's, like, Levi jeans shoes. When I had, like, nicer Nikes before. I didn't know Levi's made sneakers, and they were a size too small. So, yeah, it was like,
I like the person who stole your shoes gave you new they ones. Just kind of, like, traded up. They upscaled, and they downscaled you.
Which is why, like, I still think, like, you know, New Orleans is, like, a great, and, like, it's a nice, people are nice here, but in a very odd way. People, like, it's, people are not mean here at all. Like, I don't remember a lot. This is where I'm fucked up, because, like, who, Lord only knows what the fuck. When I went home, I was really hoping, like, I didn't get a call from, like, Louisiana Police Department. Like, we have you on video next to somebody who murdered somebody 5 minutes after we saw you on video with them, or some shit like that. Anything like that. Because there's, like, you know, I remember, like, bits and pieces of, like, basically it was, like, training day, but we were the opposite of cops.
Did you, like, scream at anybody that you didn't know? Or no. Just be like, kerblah, to, like,
no,
you
I
know,
have, like, I have...
Taurus?
No, nothing like that. I didn't... It was, like, a thing where, I don't know, it was...
You were just safe in the car the whole time?
Yeah. And then, actually, I got out of the car when he pulled over, and I was all fucked up, and I remember he got out, and I was like, oh, I guess we're getting out. We were, like, in the middle of, like, the fucking hood.
Right.
And this is kind of the last thing I really remember was getting back in the car. Maybe I fell asleep with the door unlocked, and that's how my shoes got taken. And then maybe he had some... Because, like, I remember getting back in the car, and then I don't remember much until, like, kind of waking up later. But it was like 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning. It was, like, early morning when he got out of the car. So I was going to get out of the car with him. And he was, like, down the block a little ways talking to somebody. And he almost started laughing, like, this crazy white boy is trying to get out of the car and, like, come to, like, what I'm doing. I don't know. I remember driving around with that guy, though, and, like, talking about, like, some, like, you know, serious shit. And
you know, not like serious, not like definitely not politics or nothing like that, but like, you know, I guess we kind of connected. And then like we just kind of riding around smoking crack, we stopped at a beer store, whatever, a gas station, and got like a bunch of beers and just drove around his car smoking crack and drinking beers and talking about shit. And then I don't know, kind of got hazy when the sun started to come up, and I remember trying to get out of a car and him kind of laughing, be like, get back in the fucking car. And then that's kind of all I remember, till I remember like kind of waking up at, we were at some other convenience store or something like that, and I remember coming to and being like, I gotta go fuck home. And that's when I was like, I don't know, I was kind of like, I kind of had to like get mad at him. And kind of like, not obviously not try to get tough with him, but there was like parts, and it was partially because I was cracked up, but I was like having a real hard time, because I remember during the, like throughout the night being like, all right, what can I, let's, can you just take me back, man? And like, we were in like parts of New Orleans I'd never seen before and shit, yeah, so right, I was like right. Kind of trapped. And I remember like having a real hard time getting him to take me back. And I think part of it was because like, he seemed like fucking lonely, and then I had an ATM card, and so essentially I was like basically like a debit card he could talk to and continue to smoke crack with, because we stopped at the ATM and I remember like getting small amounts each time because I was like, I'm not gonna fucking get $400 and carry that, you know what I mean?
Right.
So we stopped like four times and I got like $20, and then like on the last time I got like $40, and
just kept like copping microdoses.
Well, no, because I think he was like going around selling crack and shit. So I think it was just like,
you're going on his runs. So.
Essentially, yeah. I guess the whole night I just drove around selling crack with this guy, and then kind of buying beer and I guess giving him money for the crack I smoked, and then and honestly, like I don't know, man. There's a. There's like times where I like felt bad for him, and then as the night went on, and he like wouldn't take me home. We kept fucking drinking, and smoking crack, and I was like feeling more and more like I'm never gonna get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like thinking like, should I just like at a stoplight like punch him and run away, or just like try to get like, should I do that? But then like be in like a way more dangerous area anyways. And then I was
That's why you need Uber on your phone.
Yeah, well, at that point, I didn't have a fucking phone anymore.
The new BlackBerry didn't have Uber on it?
No, it didn't even fucking turn on. So, yeah, man, that was, like, the night. And then I kind of came back, and I realized, me and Kelly realized that, like, you know, maybe this relationship's not working out. Now we're really good friends now, and it's, I guess, I mean, not as good as you can be, just fresh off a breakup and stuff. And I don't know, man. I feel that's what I feel really the worst about. Like, ultimately, is like how I just kind of, you know, like I let her walk home alone an hour or maybe 2 hours before I was walking the exact same path and got in a car with a like big crack dealer guy.
Right.
Which means like, you know, she could easily, and she was drunk, and I was like, that's, I feel fucking terrible about that.
So did you go to, you went back home right after you went to Austin for a while?
Yeah, I went to Austin.
Debriefed yourself?
Kind of, was completely sober. Did Austin, you know, was doing comedy up there. Had told the crack story way better and more punched up than I did today. Without all the fucking sad notes and how horrible I felt. Like, you know, and the story always make it seem like I'm a fucking giant piece of shit. Which, for a long time, and still now, I always have felt like a giant piece of shit, but, like, for a while when I was back in Austin, it was really like, dude, the fuck's wrong with me in so many ways.
Right.
So, that's what I was doing, trying to get all back to that, you know, back on my whatever.
Well, hey, you know, now we're back to baseline.
Yeah.
You flew too high, you melted your wings.
Icarus.
I've never really held it against you, man. I mean,
I appreciate that, man.
Bad nights, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, well, you're always a cool guy to me, so I mean, like, you know.
I appreciate that, dude. I feel really bad about, you know, coming here and, you know, having all these ideas and, you know, making promises and shit like that, and, you know, and then not being able to handle it, I guess. I don't know. I was like, I was initially trying to think like in my mind after that happened, like, you know, can I stay here? can I try to get it together? But the funny shit is like, the 5 days before that happened, I had been completely sober because I was really trying to get it together. I was really trying. I made like this 5 day effort, which ultimately ended up in me having like one beer, which turned into two, which turned into fucking so many drinks, which turned into me and Kelly walking home like way after we should have been. We stopped at like two extra bars, and then we were passing by the last bar before we went home, and I was like, fuck you, I'm staying.
Right. Do you feel like those 5 days that it was just like a bow being pulled back and you were just ready to get shot into the fucking universe?
That's exactly
so
what
So what is that was. Stress that, like, you know, I know for me it's like stage time is like really addicting. If I like if I don't do comedy for like 3 days, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing with myself?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. So it's weird. I was terrible last night at Jacksboro. I had like two bad sets in a row and I still feel like fucked up.
Really?
Like, at Siberia I didn't do good, and then at Jacksboro I didn't do good Monday, Tuesday. But it's like, I feel like I'm kind of like working on some new stuff, and so it's not always going to work out, but I kind of like go through these spirals where I'll hate myself, and then I'm like, oh, I'm buying fried chicken now.
Right.
Because I had a bad set, and this fried chicken from a gas station
tastes
good. Man, there's so many traps here in New Orleans. There's crack. There's gas station fried chicken.
Dude.
Every gas station you walk in. And
you want to know what's crazy? I ate gas station fried chicken earlier the day before I smoked crack. So
it's a slippery slope.
It slipped me right in there, dude.
Dude, Manchu is right next to Claiborne. You think that's a fucking conspiracy, man?
I don't know if it's a conspiracy. Well, yeah, somebody conspired to be like, there's people who are gonna feel like shit in this town, and it's the type of town where they're gonna want some fried chicken.
Exactly.
After the day, after that shitty feeling.
So what's the plan now? Now you're back here, just like a little
back here
vacation or something, or like, kinda,
I'm back here trying to go forward, not feeling like I left New Orleans tail between my legs, fucking all kind of still like I kind of had like the shakes almost.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't like necessarily shaking, but I felt like my neurons were all fucked up, you know what I mean, my neurological circuits from the crack binge I'd went on and shit. So I didn't feel good. And it's not, the weird shit is like, I don't hate this town. I love this fucking place.
Yeah.
I really do. And but I mean, this is not the place for me. I can't fucking handle it at this point in my life. Like 24-hour bars, honestly, dude. If there were 24-hour bars in Austin, I'm thinking back to like how the bars closed at 2 in Austin, and I was like, what the fuck? And it's like, but then I drove home.
Right.
And it's like, dude, if that was 4, like, or even never, like, who the fuck knows, man? And it's just like, I kind of, coming down here was almost like, it was just like a physical representation of like, listen, dude, you really gotta get some shit together, because like, in Austin, you can be like, kind of like work during the day, and then on the weekend, like, oh, drink till 2, and when you go home, you have beers in your fridge, and that's the only place, you know, or somebody else's place.
Right, right.
But like, then I came here with like the same fucking, you know, whatever level of what I want to do in this city is just like, okay, that's why I like it. Everyone's like, I ain't mad at you.
Right, right.
You
want
to fucking, you want to go eat some sloppy food? You want to have some buttery food? Go,
yeah.
I ain't mad at you. You want to smoke some crack and get all fucked up? And
it is very enabling, you know? It's
right.
Like,
so
there's like no fucking health food stores. I had to get on Amazon today on Amazon. A giant tub of this like green powder came in the mail. And I mix that shit. It's like got every single herb in the world or whatever.
It's like a
mix that
herbal
shit
life.
Water. Yeah, just so I can shit after fucking gas station chicken. I need like a mega dose of fucking minerals.
Of actual food.
Nutrition, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I eat the chicken and then have a powder, that's like a salad. And like a Caesar salad with a little chicken on it, right?
Yeah, basically. It's
right?
Blend it up, essentially.
Blend that shit up. So
So my plans now are to
travel and go. I'm going, and I hate to say it like a fucking old white guy who just retired. Now I will travel. You know what I mean? I'm gonna sail my fucking yacht. Yes. No, I'm gonna hop in a car and I'm gonna go to Denver first, just cause I've never been there, and then I'm going out to LA for like a month for sure, cause my buddy's got a place out there that he said I'm welcome to come stay at, and I'm gonna go really like try to, you know, be like, cause when I first started doing stand up, man, I it took me a while to get into like the drinking and all the other stuff. It's like, when I used to fucking do stand up, I used to like really work at it and not hang out with anybody and not try to be friends, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it really served me a lot better, man. I know, like, I made friends just from being around people,
right.
But like I wasn't like in it to like, you know, go be a douchebag on stage and then come off and fucking go have a bunch of beers, and like that's really what it became, man. I'm fucking embarrassed by that in a lot of ways, but I guess I'm glad I like went through it.
Yeah, it is like it can be a college if you study for your test.
Exactly.
If you take your test dead sober, exactly. And you go home. It's like a really hard class where you only have like 5 minutes to present.
Right.
You know.
And that's you fucking nailed it. Like if you go to college and you want to go like college, then you'll fucking get that experience. You really won't get that much out of it.
Right.
But like if you go to college and really fucking try and don't do all that other stuff, you're inevitably going to end up in situations like that, and you're going to get a lot out of it. And
yeah,
if you really work, and honestly, dude, like I haven't been in terms of working on like my stand up and not like, you know, other stuff, and like, you know, I guess my just working on my shit, honestly, working on myself, to me none of it's that different. Like, you know, stand up and writing sketches and doing podcasts, you know, it's all putting something out, and that's like, I haven't been doing a lot of that, been talking about it a lot, so.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, martial arts or something is like a way to improve yourself, but you're also like improving your ability to kick ass, and
right.
I think like, you can only improve yourself the best way, maybe, I guess, it is just like, get good at a skill, a mastery of something.
Right.
You know.
So, I mean, while we're on the topic of improving myself, it's like there's a lot of other shit besides just comedically I need to work on too, and you know, I'm hoping to just kind of have a new place to work on that. And I was hoping that with New Orleans, and then it didn't turn out to be that way, you know. It was just it showed me like what the fuck, you know, is up with me. So.
And what is up with you, and how did that happen?
What is up with me is that I don't really A, I'm lazy. B, I don't really ever have a plan. Mm-hmm. I've never really had any kind of plan or made any type of, you know, I don't know, what, like, oh, what's that called? Never made any type of effort, like, towards anything real. I've always just been like, I'm a stand-up, I do stand-up, and then for a while, like, I really worked on stand-up, and then I got better at it, and I even got better at it, like, the more I stopped caring about it in a lot of ways, like,
right.
I could just kind of flow, and it opened my brain up to being funnier and better and more whatever it is people are looking for, you know.
And then it's almost like once you brought those boundaries down, then like substance abuse started.
Yeah, once I let all that, once I kind of let,
oh, let's not care so much, let's just relax and go with the flow. Well,
and
going
then,
with the flow at a bar is drinking.
Right. So I was relaxing, going with the flow is working for my stand up and for what I was trying to do, and I was getting booked and like all this, you know, I was doing, it was like the fruits of my labor from when it was labor.
Right.
Became even bigger fruits once I stopped laboring for them, but then it was like almost like I never planted the next crop, so it's like now I'm just sitting here like looking at my garden, it's all fucked up, and I'm like, you know, like shit. like oh man, I need to fucking really get and do some work on my garden, on myself.
Yeah.
Mainly, man, it's like honestly, like I'd rather be a happy person, you know, so rather than like some fucking sad comic. Cause I'm never, the thing I'm starting to realize about a lot of this shit is like, if you want to like
do, if you want to be, essentially, if you want to make a living at this, it all, bottom line, comes down to, like, either people being able to, like, trust you to do a job, you know what I mean? And, like, I know that there's tons of stand-ups who have, like, you know, had careers being all fucked up, but at the end of the day, it's like, it's hard to build something when, like, that's really what you're doing. Like, it becomes, like, you're like, oh, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. I really still don't really know exactly what I'm doing, but I know that I'm trying to do it, and I'm trying to do it for, you know, for, on it, like, health, mental health reasons in a lot of ways, which I guess, you know, stand-up does not always lend itself to that, but...
Well, it also attracts crazies, because there is, like, a profound imbalance that a lot of people have where they don't feel like they're listened to, or,
right.
or they don't feel like they're being heard. And I think, like, nothing gets you heard more than doing stand-up.
Right.
You're heard, you have a microphone.
Exactly.
And so, like, if people all have this imbalance where they don't feel like anyone's listening, and then they all are jumping into comedy to correct that balance, then, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for, like, what you're saying about the reset, like, I totally did that. Like, when I came here, you know, to go to UNO, it's like I had a plan and, like, a goal. And I was talking to another comic the other day, and I was like, well, right now my goal is, I told my school as soon as I got in there, like, my last semester, I want them, my school, to help me shoot a special. And I was talking to a comic, and I will have done, I've done comedy, like, 3 years now, and by the time I shoot that, I will have been doing it for 5 years. And someone was like, well, you're not ready. I would tell nobody to start or to record a special only 5 years in, you're not ready. And then I was just thinking, like, or you could say good luck and well done, and, like, anyone who, like, really, really focuses on this exact goal for, like, if you're calling your shot, like, 3 years ago, and then you're like, that's gonna happen, that's a fucking powerful. And, like, nobody can really, you know what I mean? Like, if someone has such a clear goal, it does kind of clear...
Yeah.
You know, you are able to focus. Like, you know, a 16-year-old is winning Olympic golds.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have enough. No, if they fucking go on this day, I will be the best ever. You know, it's hard.
Yeah. I
don't really bet against that, you know?
Yeah, no, and honestly, like, that's, I haven't had that ever. What my goal when I first started was to do stand-up, like, just to try to be a stand-up. Then after a while, I was like, okay, you're that now, but you suck. You're not funny. And it was like, get funnier. Like, write more. Do whatever you got to do to be funnier. And then I got better, and then it was like, okay, you're kind of funny now, but nobody really wants to listen to you because you're fucking doing stand-up. Nobody wants to listen to, like, somebody doing stand-up unless, like, you got... Unless it's, like, some kind of gimmicky... Not even gimmicky, but just perfectly crafted thing, which I'm not that guy ever. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm more of a... I would hope... I mean, I hope in the future, I hope I'm more of like a Patrice O'Neill type, a Richard Pryor type of guy who can kind of just go on stage and have your ideas, then hit them a different way. And like, when I started doing that, it was like, I just found this kind of place where I was like flowing and being cool. And I, you know, I was doing well. And I, you know, a lot of people, whether or not they like me, a lot of people usually... Like, I gotta respect what I do on stage, so, you know, that felt good. And then there's like, after that, it was like my goals were like, well, I guess I'm just keep fucking doing this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But like, for me, it's very simple. It's like, when you have an hour that you're ready, like, you fucking get the means to record that hour.
Right.
And what does that entail? That entails like one night or 6 times doing 10 minutes. You film it in at a good place. Have you ever done 10 minutes at 6 decent shows? That would actually translate if you had filmed it. So
right.
You know what I mean? I think bottom line, it takes, what does it take? An hour of material and maybe like $3,000, maybe $5,000.
The funny thing,
film it properly.
What I always got hung up on is like, I love doing stand up and that's why I've done it. I've done it for 5 years now, and I've loved it, and I've done a lot of it, and, you know, it's always been a lot of fun. But then it's, like, the whole idea of, like, monetizing all this stuff, or not even monetizing it, but, like, there's the next step, You know, especially in places like New Orleans and Austin. Like, Austin has 1.5 comedy clubs.
You know, one that's really can open shit up for you getting paid and you getting more work. And then this place has, like, none, really. And then, you know, all these other places is, like, it's real cutthroat. Like, that's why I'm kind of looking forward to L.A. is, like, let's see what I got and then see if I can get better and then see if I can, like, you know, if I get on at the fucking Laugh Factory, even if it's at an open mic, and I do well, like, and even if nobody comes up to me afterwards, like, if I have that video just with the Laugh Factory logo behind it, that's, like, a whole thing, you know? So, and then, I guess you just gotta keep trying to do whatever you're trying to do, and that's what, I just stopped trying to do shit. I really did. I just was trying to be funny, and part of the reason why I came out here is La Nuit. I was like, it would be a good experience to kind of know what that's like to be a part of, from the other side of it.
Right, to try to manage and promote.
Yeah, and try to, and then, you know, eventually, I think it would be really, really awesome to open, like, a comedy club in Austin, like, the number two one, just so that, because that town could use, you know, another one, and then it was, like, because it's already, like, this comedy town that people talk about, but realistically, like, it's a really good comedy community, and there's not a ton of opportunity if you're not going to, you got to do the work yourself, and then you got to put out shit on the internet and do all that stuff, but in terms of, like, pure stand-up, I mean, it's a little difficult sometimes to get, you know, especially paid stand-up. And not everyone bitches and moans, and ultimately it's all how much you're going to work at it, so, you know.
How's it going,
man?
Hang in there, bud.
So, yeah. You know, I'm feeling good, though, now, man. I gotta be honest, I've been relatively down on myself and pretty upset and depressed since I left here, and this is the best I've felt. I think a lot of it is just like I feel a lot better being back and not, you know, on the other side of it and not feeling like I just ran out of town and never came back, and now I'm like gonna go try to like continue to always have this thing nagging at my past and shit, you know.
I could have made it in any town, but New Orleans kicked my dick off.
That's what I'm saying, dude. I almost really hope that, like, I go, you know, make it somewhere, and then I'll be like, dude, honestly, like, toughest town, comedy-wise, it's New Orleans. Like, because, honestly, like, people around here, it's not like there's a tremendous amount of talent around here, but there's a tremendous amount of people who will let you know that you're not talented around here. there's a lot of those people. And I love that, man.
They'll take off your nice shiny shoes and give you back like much shittier ones.
Right. They'll be like, listen, we both know you just smoked crack. There's no way you belong in those shoes and with that phone. And you just got to be like, well... That's why I was like, I couldn't even be upset. Like, if I had gotten robbed walking home drunk and somebody put a gun in my face, it would be like, it's like, oh, I'm a victim. I get to be like, you know. But it was like, I literally just like, I might as well have just been like, nah, I don't need a ride home, but here are my shoes and my phone.
It saves you so much time.
I'm going to go walk home and maybe I can reconcile with my girlfriend and shit.
Yeah. Instead, you're like, yeah, I'll get in your Cadillac. Yeah. What could go wrong?
Ultimately, it's just I'm going to lose 8 hours of my life smoking crack, and I'm going to end up in different shoes. I guess that's what it was. Like, hey, what's up, man? I guess that's really what it was. It was like, you know, I got the shoes and the phone for having gone through that. I didn't get robbed. It was just like, you go through this and it's like, I think it's like, if I handled the situation differently, I think I would have just gotten flat out robbed or like, you know, got my ass kicked and robbed or hopefully not murdered. You know,
my friend Easy also, he passed out on Frenchman Street drunk and then like people like stole his wallet and stole his phone. And it's just like, dude, like, he, like, barely has a place to live, and he's, like, drinking on Frenchman Street, and it's like, okay, there's so many problems, like, right off the bat.
Right.
But, I don't know, man, I would say, like, do you ever, like, write your goals down, or write
I did, and each time I've done it, it's really really fucking helps. And then just, you know, I guess I get distracted really fucking easily too, man. The amount of weed I smoke definitely doesn't help. The amount I drink definitely doesn't help.
Right.
The people I'm always around, like, it makes me feel normal to do all this shit.
Right,
and it's
right,
not
right.
their fault. I mean,
right.
And they can handle it way better than me. That's the thing. It's like, I can't handle it the same way. And it's like, it's always been a part of my life, though. Like, you know, smoking weed and drinking since I was... It was, like, really the first time I even attempted to be socialized. Like, social with other... Like, really, actually.
Yeah.
And it was just like, yeah, you know, that was part of it. And then, I don't know, man. I've thought this and said this a lot, where it's like, if you really do have something you want and you drive for it, it shuts the world out in a lot of ways that would hurt you.
Yeah.
Where it's like, if I had like a goal, if I had like a real thing I really wanted, there's no way I would have even stayed out that late doing
it.
But
I guess like, what I don't understand is like, isn't every comic's goal to, when they have an hour, record it? I feel like if we get like wishy-washy, like, well, if I just did this, then maybe someone would see it. No, nobody's going to give you anything.
Right.
Unless you fucking go and shoot. I really think the business model of like all comics should be, you know, when they're starting out, like, you pay for your first special. No one's going to give you your first special.
Right.
Nowadays, you pay for it. And if you make something that's so fucking undeniable that someone has to suck your dick for it,
right,
you know, that's how your career starts.
I guess there's always been a little, actually not a little, there's always been a big voice of denial in my head, which has really, I think, helped me be funnier and be...
What do you mean by denial?
Where it's like, you ain't shit. Like, this is what I've heard my whole life,
just
honestly.
In the back of your head, like,
yeah,
you could never
like,
do
it's
that.
It's drilled into me that it's like, it's not that I'm not a good person or that I'm not gonna be, you know...
It's not like I can't be a comic, but it's just that there's always going to be... Like, I'm just not impressed a lot of the time.
Right.
Especially, like, some of these jokes that I do really well with, like, I've been telling them for over a year. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And that's, like, I haven't... In my 5 years of doing comedy, it's usually, like, I just let material go. I just don't... There's a ton of shit that used to work that I just forgot and I don't do anymore. Because it's not... I don't feel it. I don't fucking want to say it. Because there's new shit that, like, really sparks my interest
that I
really want to talk about. And ultimately, when you're starting out, it's damn near impossible to get more than, you know, 15 minutes, usually. If you get, like, a 25-minute thing, oftentimes there's five people there, or it's once every 3 months, you know, and, I don't know. I was, you know, living like 5 minute set to 5 minute set, especially in Austin, where it's like the whole stand up culture is a lot of ways driven by the funniest person in Austin contest. So it's every spring, all these comics are like, I could be, and then it's like there's the semifinalists, the finalists.
Hey, so we're continuing on episode 144 with Mikey Swenson. We had a bit of a technical issue. My card got full. I didn't realize until too late. I got all the way home, and we were trying to find another SD card. We got 38 minutes of the others.
It was full because he found out he was going to be on Roast Battle, so he just started screaming and dancing.
Yeah, so just a quick plug. I'm going to be appearing at the Comedy Store Roast Battle December 29th, 11 p.m. in the Belly Room. I'm going to battle Eric Wargo. So, hey, look forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happening. So if you're in the Los Angeles area.
Congratulations, man.
December 29th, I'm going to battle Eric Wargo at the Comedy Store's Roast Battle. And I have a bunch of battles planned in New Orleans at Cafe Istanbul, January, February, March, April 2016. Details are forthcoming. Mikey Swenson, we were talking about your psychology.
we were
talking about, remember yesterday?
Yeah, I don't know where it cut off. Did you?
You know, I'm not exactly sure either, but I'm a busy man. I had homework to do. I had a lot of other things going
on. No worries.
But I think generally the audience was getting a picture that you had one super bad night. And you kind of had your whole life set up. You had a girlfriend. Everything was going fine.
Yep.
And but I guess what I want to know is, like, I'm not exactly sure we got exactly to this, but like, what do you think was the mechanism of that, of getting into that car, of going on that journey? Like, what is there some, do you have like a deep from childhood, like residual depression,
yeah,
or a feeling that you can't, and what is that, where'd that come from?
I guess
from?
It's, I have a lot of kind of fuck it in me, I guess, which I might have said it on the earlier portion of the podcast, but, I don't know. A part of it was like, well, it'll be a good story. B, it was like, well, I'm no racist, so I'm gonna get in this. This guy looks like David Banner's white Cadillac, and I'm sure he'll just drive me right home. I mean, it is 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm hammered, chubby white boy in a Johnston and Murphy shirt, so I'm sure he's always giving fellows like me a ride home. What else? I don't know. I talked to the guy for couple seconds and I was like, this guy seems all right. And then he was like do you want to ride, and I was like, yeah, I'm four blocks straight down the road. And I was, part of me was almost like, I think I was like, it's kind of dangerous walking.
So let me
accept a ride from this obviously stand-up guy who for no reason at all is just parked on the side of the road talking to whoever walks by and offering them rides. So yeah, then I was really hammered. I was not in a good place mentally, and I hopped in that car, and he didn't go straight to my house. He took a right immediately and then pulled out a crack pipe, and next thing I know,
how sure are you, what percentage sure are you that he never pulled out his dick?
91%.
That's strong.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that I never sucked it, but he could have pulled it out.
To pee on the side of the road or something like that?
I don't know. Like, we talked to him. He talked to me.
He talked about his dick a lot?
Yeah, he talked about how he enjoyed gay stuff, too. So.
Right.
I don't know. It seemed like... seemed like I was all there. You know what I mean?
It seemed above board.
Yeah, it didn't seem like I was blowing any. My breath didn't smell like dick, and it smelled like crack. So maybe it was.
Did his crack hide dick?
I hope so.
You put your dick in his crack?
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe his dick already smelled like crack from all the other white boys who hopped in his car earlier.
Smoked
that day.
It and blew him.
Who knows, man? I know, I am a survivor. So, thank God to my fuzzy memory that I don't remember sucking a dick if I did. Maybe he was a shaman. He knew it the whole time. He's like, this kid needs some help.
A crack shaman?
Crack shaman. Why not?
He's like, hey, smoke this, and maybe you didn't suck my dick.
Yeah, right? Maybe you did.
Didn't you learn something?
The truth is how you perceive it.
Mm-hmm. The truth is whether or not you swallow.
Yeah, the truth is whether or not you remember swallowing. Which I do not, therefore I did not. That's how all those corporate assholes get away with it. I do not recall.
Yeah. Hey, did you pay off this senator to vote a certain way? You know, I don't recall.
I do not recall. Did you suck that crack dealer's dick? Oh, well, definitely.
Yeah, I sucked a lot.
No, I actually, I'm pretty certain I didn't, and I tried to remember like what happened for those 2 hours, but like, I don't think it was like that. I don't think my relationship to that guy was any type of dick sucking relationship.
Speaking of relationship, what's going on with Kelly Stone? You have been living here.
I've been staying here.
What's
yeah.
going on? Are you guys mending bridges? Or?
Yeah, we're mending bridges. We're trying to being friends and stuff. And it's been really good for me, man. And I hope it's been good for her. But yeah, we're not together. Being on the other end of this relationship and thinking back, like, there were times when I had no idea what the fuck she was upset about or getting at, and then like looking at it now, I'm like, oh, like, yeah, I totally get how you were upset that I fucking
acted whatever so many different ways. So
what do you mean by delusional and stubborn? Like delusional, like, hey, this is all gonna work out comedy wise and we'll be famous in the future. And,
yeah, that's one way. Another way is like delusional, oh, I'm not jealous. I'm not a jealous person, you know what I mean? But like, you know, and you know you are, but you're like, I know I'm jealous, but like I'm regular jealous. I'm healthy jealous. Like you're so delusional that it's like no real level of jealousy is healthy. It's like, you know, there's probably another word for jealousy.
Well, I mean, it's like if you're in a relationship and you love the other person, like obviously if they started loving somebody else and being sexual with somebody else, you'd be like, excuse me, like,
right,
you know, I just think that's normal. And people that pretend not to be jealous, it's like, oh, you don't feel anything.
Right. Like, well, a lot of the time the jealousy, I had nothing. It was like way before me or had nothing to do with me from, and it was never like I never felt like she was going to cheat on me or anything or fall for somebody else. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty confident in myself in terms of me and, I was, you know, when we were together, but like me and Kelly we had a good connection and there was really nobody. Nobody was like, "Oh, is this gonna be a problem or anything?" And even it was to the point where I was like, "If there was something like that, then it would be like, hey, fucking good luck." I mean, I don't know what to say. I'm not good at trying to get people to like, you know, change their minds about me. I guess I can make them laugh, but once you know how big a piece of shit I can be, pretty hard to go back, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's pretty hard to change that. It's just something I gotta live with and try to get better about, or not. I mean, fuck. Really is all up to the individual. I know how bad I felt after, you know, my crack night, so don't ever want to feel like that again. And I especially don't ever want to do that to somebody I was with and cared a lot about. I really don't want to do that ever again. So lesson learned. And I don't know, I mean, you know, it's too little too late. And realistically, you know, in the first half of the podcast I say ultimately and realistically and honestly probably about 40 times each. I'm trying to really not do that, but I'm trying to really not be a piece of shit to my girlfriend that didn't stop me from doing it. So, what was I saying?
I don't know. This has been interesting, though. I think you're being very revealing, though. It's like, you know,
I can't really help it, man. I don't really have any other way of being. Like, I'm just trying to be honest, mainly for myself. Sometimes I feel like I'm overly honest because I'm so full of shit.
Yeah,
that it's like I realize that I am just naturally somebody who's completely full of shit, and like I can't even tell when I'm lying to myself, man. I have no idea. Like I really do honestly think a lot of shit that I'm like, you know, I've woken up, I've been fucking, you know, a couple years ago, like I used to exercise and shit, and then I stopped, and then I was like, oh, I really need to get back into it. And there was probably like a good couple months there, like every morning I woke up and I was like, yep, today I'm going to work out. And then I didn't. But every morning I could still wake up and feel as certain as I was the day before that I was going to go work out. And then, you know, 4 weeks in a row, I haven't worked out once and I'm still like, you know, 4 week and one day I'm like, today I'm definitely, there's no doubt. And that's like a really rudimentary, you know. I've told myself, like, I'm never doing cocaine again. Told myself I'm never fucking a bunch of shit. Never gonna bang that fucking dirty tramp again. You know what I mean? And you do. Not you. Me. I do. I mean, I'm sure a lot of other people do. In fact, a ton of people listening to this podcast probably have similar...
They're probably banging their tramp right now. Exactly. Their earbuds are falling out. They're banging their tramp. It gets to the more, like, lustful part of the banging of the tramp, and like, their earbuds are shooed out of their fucking ears.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, I know. I I know what you mean. It's like, you know, let me tell you this. Today, you know how I was telling you about index cards?
Mm-hmm.
You know, today I wrote down UNO counseling, or like the fucking like therapist at the UNO.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, call this number and make an appointment so that you can see a therapist.
Yep.
So that you're not going crazy.
Yep.
And I did everything on my list today except for that. And but then I'm telling myself, like, hey, maybe I should like go in on Friday morning and just make an appointment. Yeah. And even if I don't get one then I'll be like, okay, Monday morning I'll have an appointment.
Right.
And I think that's probably gonna happen though. But
hey, I had the exact same.
But then what happened was then like a few minutes later what happened was I got booked on the roast battle and I was like, well, that's everything. Now I'm not even sad anymore.
Now I don't have anything to talk to my therapist about.
Yeah, because now like I know I'm going to fly out and do that show and come back and that's going to make me happy and that's going to fix everything else.
It's funny because that's the exact same way that I would imagine crackheads are. It's like, I got to get my life together until it's like, oh, there's a crack rock. And it's like, well, now I'm fine.
Exactly. All that shit is like bullshit.
And then a couple weeks later,
show in December, and then the show's over, and you're like, "Oh, yeah. I'm gonna shoot myself."
That's one thing about drugs. It really does. It narrows down what's important. Yeah. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, what becomes important in your life when you're doing a bunch of drugs is drugs. It's only drugs.
But like whether it's weed or stage time, it's like equally. Thing because you think that in your life has a certain direction because you have this thing that's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately, you know, again, with that fucking word, Jesus Christ, dude.
Stop judging your sense of the word ultimately and just keep saying what the thought is connected to it.
Well, I guess what I was going to say is that everyone, like, we're all driving towards two things. Tomorrow. Well, not all the time. Who knows, man? But just, you know, we're all going to die one day. Hopefully, if we're lucky.
Yeah. So you're saying crack Cadillacs?
Crack Cadillacs.
Plug shops.
I'm not saying that. I'm not even trying to say that in a negative way. It's almost like a freeing thing that I'm still afraid of death. I haven't made my peace with that, but. The fact that we all are going to die is like, well, it really does kind of put a cap on like, well, you can spend that time smoking crack or you can spend that time building the fucking Eiffel Tower. Either way, you're going to turn to dust anyways. So just do whatever works the best.
Yeah, do what you want.
You know, I'm trying to like, there's probably some people out there who figured out a way to like smoke crack and be happy. Their whole lives. You know what I mean? Maybe not crack. Probably coke.
Maybe their life didn't last like 10 years longer, but
yeah,
they were fucking boom.
I would love to
some times.
Yeah, I'd love to meet some kind of guy who's just like seriously on drugs, but like not like, no, this actually works for me. But I guess the whole idea is like addiction is the problem, and that's anything. And that's, I mean,
do you ever think about doing a 12-step, going into
AA? Actually, I had one of my old semi-girlfriends from high school tell me that I should do that. I was in high school. That was like a year after high school. I mean, I don't know. The reason why she told me is because she was doing it too, and she was like, it really helps for me. And now she's been sober for 4 years. She's got like a really healthy relationship and doesn't eat gluten and, you know, fucking doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, none of that shit. She just like meditates, does yoga, has a good relationship and you know, does artistic shit, I guess. Who knows? But yeah, 12 steps might help me. But
do you think she misses the old times, you know?
No, not at all.
Do you think you can get some of that?
Some of that old
AA beef?
Probably. Not from her, but...
Hey, speaking of which, do you still have that bottle opener?
Yeah, no. I would imagine it's if you can talk, you know what I mean? If you have the ability to be charming and funny and all that stuff. I mean, AA is a pretty good place to. If you're looking for beef.
Beef?
I said beef. I thought you said beef. It's all beef to me, man. It's all I'm looking for. Just burgers and pussy. It's all beef. Just give me some fucking beef. What kind? I don't care. Grass fed or.
I think you're used to those Texas girls. That's all
beef. Yeah, that's right? All
beef curtains.
Beef. Beef is better. Beef. I saw a beaver today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I took it as a sign. Sign that. Stop chasing owls, start chasing beavers, huh? Man.
All right. So what do you what do you hope to accomplish before you turn to dust? What do you have you thought about this more since we were talking about this yesterday of like
if you
kind of like focus on a goal, then it kind of like can momentarily clear the woods of your demons so that you can see like a positive thing at the end of the fucking tunnel.
I used to have a thing in my head that I wanted to kind of bridge the gap when it came to comedy of like Bill Hicks and Patrice O'Neill, which is a tall order, I know, but I thought I could do it. And then honestly, like once I really started to realize that I might be able to, and it's like I'm not trying to compare myself to the great comedians, it's just like those are my two favorites and they're very different, so it's like if I could kind of try to take inspiration from those two, the two guys who are my most favorite, and try to incorporate it into my own comedy, then I would be happy. And then, like, you know, I've had sets where I did like amazingly well and accomplished that, and then it's like, oh well, I'm not, like, it's funny because like I am that in my own mind for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever of what just happened, but then it's like afterwards it's like, well, nobody gives a shit still. I'm still not going to get paid for this. And it's like, but so it's like, I kind of got to readjust of like having actual goals. You know, realistically, again, there's that fucking word, but you know, the goals are got to be attainable. Me and Kelly Stone were talking about how that's like probably a better, the vague goal of getting funnier or getting shows or being good at comedy or, you know, really practicing at open mics, like that goal will get you as far as it'll get you, but it also, if you don't really kind of focus up at one point or another, then I'm pretty sure you'll just get really good at being at open mics. I don't want to get really good at open mics, man. That's not the goal for me. It was for a little while, and then I realized, like, oh shit, I could be the best open micer ever and still an open micer. Doesn't really matter. So, you know, you know, I don't know. There's time to grow up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, your goal should be your first hour, you mm-hmm. know? And if it's like, if you have any cash in the bank, it's like fucking.
No, what you're right.
What you should do is you should get an hour of material and you should film.
Perform it, yeah.
Perform it at one venue, one time. Yep. Legit. Get one audience, one time.
Yep.
Spend money to promote that one show, one time. I
thought about it a lot. I thought about your path of that goal. And I'm like, wow, that's actually probably a thing that I can really kind of focus on and do. And I thought of the name for my album, so
I'm what's the name of your album gonna be?
It's from a Bruce Springsteen song. It's a lyric from a Bruce Springsteen song called the album's gonna be called Ice Cream Truck in a Deserted Street. Recorded at Jenkinson's in Point Pleasant, New Jersey on the shore.
Fucking awesome.
So I'm pretty pumped. I realize.
So when is what month and what year is that album gonna get recorded?
It's gotta be during the summer, else nobody's gonna be at the Jersey Shore. So,
so you're thinking July?
July on my birthday of next year. Why not 2016?
July 2016?
Sure, yeah. I got a pretty good half hour. I'm pretty proud of right now, and then I got other jokes that I could work on in a year. I'm pretty sure I can. I'm 5 years in on the Sunday after Thanksgiving is when 5 years has gone by. since my very first open mic that I ever did. And, you know, if by what it would be five and basically three quarters years, by 5 3/4 years, I don't have an hour that I can at least record. Not necessarily going to be like the greatest hour ever, but I mean, if I
it won't be embarrassing.
No, definitely it would have been embarrassing 2 years ago. 45 minutes would have been super embarrassing 2 years ago. But you know, I mean, it's true, dude. You can I've seen it. Like, I've seen it all throughout, even from when I started to now. For the last 5 years, I've seen like people who are pretty good, but they never really got past wanting to do well at open mics, and they never got past performing at open mics, and then they, you know, they get on pretty good shows, you know, like locally, right. But most they're ever gonna do is make $50 and get a lot of high fives and, you know, fucking ball washing from other comics, which,
yeah.
Which I'm not trying to knock. I mean, if you got a day job that you like and then you do comedy at night and just do it for fun, I've seen a lot of people be super fucking happy, like, you know, just drinking, hanging out with comics, being one of the funny, right. Funny guys, you know, meeting girls and stuff, or whoever you're into, meeting people. You know, that works for some people. The only thing that kind of bugs me is that most people who, even if they do seem happy and they've been doing open mics for, you know, 8 years and they're good, they're pretty good, you know, they still keep up that charade of like, oh, when I get on Conan. It's like, dude, somebody who's been doing it for 2 years who's basically as good as you, who's in New York right now, like, working his tail off to try to get on Conan, like, you know, I mean, Austin's like a great fucking town to be a local comedy guy in.
Right. To have a job at
yeah. The
post office
or wherever, man. Or a bartender,
man. Yeah. And then do it like four nights a week.
There's
and
a
like
yeah,
sustain
there's...
a level of dignity while also being a postal worker. Yeah.
There's a couple of comics who I know in Austin who they don't even take they do it because they enjoy talking shit, they enjoy having fun, they enjoy the company of the comedians, but they don't.
You're saying some people are enjoying this?
Yeah, dude, there's really some people who enjoy this, or it's either that they enjoy it, but they dislike the rest of life so much
yeah.
that they are like, yeah, I'll do comedy, you know what I mean? It's like their life is such a steady negative thing that, like, this one, it's just like another drug, man. It really is for a lot of people. But you gotta, I gotta fucking Charlie Sheen this shit. Like, if I'm smoking crack, I need four hookers there.
I'm winning.
Yeah, exactly. I need to do things with a purpose. Like, that guy always had a purpose, regardless of how crazy he got. He wouldn't smoke crack if there weren't porn stars in his house.
Can I tell you something that put me in a shame spiral recently?
Let's hear it.
So I did a mic, and then John Rowe. So I did the Friday night mic at Londonui, and John Rowe came up to me and he goes, "You shouldn't smile so much while you're doing your jokes." And I was like, "Why?" He's like, "It makes you, you know, you don't have a good smile." And I was like, "Are you saying I'm ugly? Like, if you say I'm ugly, then that's, like, rude to say that your, like, smile is not good." You know what
yeah.
I mean? And I was like, I think what you're talking about is more of, like, a timing thing. Where, like, if I'm smiling before saying the joke, then it's, like, a timing
yeah.
issue where I'm, like, trying to get rewarded before I've justified the reward.
Right.
Like, I'm smiling smugly before I've said anything funny.
Is that what,
like,
sent
that
you
what
into the...
Or are you saying that I'm just... I have an ugly smile, and every time I smile, I should be not doing that.
What
did
you
I mean?
Say? He said it's because you have an ugly smile?
He just... you know, I don't really know what John Rowe is saying when he's speaking to me most of the time.
He's
but
just mad because he has to,
like,
wear a paper hat,
you know,
at work. That's why he's so fucking mad.
But it's just, you know, there's a million reasons to not like yourself, you know, to hate everything that you say of to think like, oh, that one joke that I bombed means that I'll never make anything and I don't deserve anything in my life. And so, like, you know, it's like there's a thousand reasons to hate yourself and very few reasons to think that you can actually make a living doing a stand-up.
Well, it's funny, like, how so you, it's funny how you put those two things together. Like, they're like, they naturally go together. It's like, there's a thousand reasons to hate yourself and a few reasons why you'll succeed at stand-up. It's like, what about the reasons you should like yourself aside from stand-up? It's like, the only reason why I'd like myself is if doing well at stand-up. It's like, I don't know, man. Yeah. For me, it's like, I hope I can like myself because, like, you know, I have a good girlfriend or I've been eating well or fucking I wrote a poem that was awesome or fucking I painted a picture. And then, like, or on top of that, like, I got a fucking booked on roast battle. It's hard. It's been hard for me because when I started comedy, I started when I was 20, and before that, I really didn't have much of a, never really wanted much of a social life. I kind of kept to myself mostly. I had friends, and I had a bunch of friends in high school. We all, you know, fucked around, did funny shit, but I never really didn't really come out of my shell at all until I started doing stand up, and even then, it took me like two and a half years before I felt like I was even funny at all to, like, try to talk to anybody. But, like, you know, in New Jersey, not a lot of comics there know me. Not a lot of comics. I'm not friends with a lot of comics. I know, like, five or six guys who would, like, you know, if I was in town in New Jersey or New York or whatever, I could, like, hit up and they'd be like, yeah, I know who you are. And I remember you or semi-know, you know that you were a guy who does comedy or whatever. But, you know, it's, I didn't have, what it was is when I still don't in a lot of ways. Like, I didn't have anything to be funny about. It's kind of hard to, like, be a relatable comic when your whole life is trying to relate to fucking people being, but you're the only one talking. You know what I mean? I spent, like, I spent fucking, you know, tons and tons of time at open mics where to the point where I just didn't have any fucking friends left over. What really did it to me was in New York, bringer shows. So I would, like, invite my friends in to watch me do comedy, and they'd be, like, excited because it was, like, you know, they're like, oh, my fucking, this guy's going to do, it's exciting. You know, you have a friend for
right.
6 years, and he's like, I'm going to really put myself out there, and I might fall flat on my face. And, you know, all the dudes who I've been friends with for a while are like, oh, I fucking hope you do. And then, like, all the girls are like, what if he succeeds? Maybe he's going to be great.
Maybe I'll look as weird.
Yeah, and then, or, I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of girls who are like, I hope he really fucking fails. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I kind of, it was funny because, like, they would come in to New York City, which is, if you drove in, it was $12 at the fucking Lincoln Tunnel. Then you get in, it's $10, $15 a park. Then it's $10 at the door. It's a 2-drink minimum, and each of those drinks are at minimum $9. So it's like they come in, they spend like $60-$70, and then we go out to another bar and spend even more. And it's like, but the whole thing was that I bombed, so it was like no one had fun. And then, like, they're just kind of drinking with me, like trying to either cheer me up or just trying to, like, change the night. You know what I mean? Like, and then none of them really came to two shows, so I just ran through all my friends, and then I was like, you know, still trying to go do comedy. I was like, hey, you guys want to hang out? They're like, we'll hang out, but we're not coming to your show.
2 weeks salary trying to be your friend.
Yeah,
and then
it's not easy.
You also suck dick on stage, so, like,
it's true.
My pussy's, like, super dry whenever you text me.
It happened, man. That actually happened.
Yeah,
where, like, a girl was like, I was like, we were, like, together hooking up the whole deal. And then she was like, I'd love to come to one of your shows. And I ate shit. And then she literally just stopped talking to me, which it's gotta be hard. It's gotta be hard to watch someone you're fucking go up and bomb in front of everybody and then not have that be, like,
an issue.
Yeah. Like, it's hard. Yeah. It's like, I invited her and I was like, oh, I was being all nice. And I was like, I think I can do it. She laughed at all my dumb shit in the bedroom. And then she saw the same shit that we both thought was funny. Just utterly fail.
But it's not that it wasn't funny. Again, it's like this timing thing. It's
yeah.
Like if you can recreate that moment genuine exactly. the way it happened the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a lot of skill to recreate a moment
yeah.
where it's not awkward in front of a bunch of strangers that are pissed that they spent $70 it's to true. Get there.
It's well, you know what I've seen? I've seen comics bomb really bad, but confidently, or maybe not even confidently, but just almost like obliviously.
Right.
Like it wasn't even a thing in their mind that they gave a shit that no one was laughing.
Right.
And those guys are always having a great time after the show, and like there's still a girl kind of hanging on to him and shit.
Right.
Like, he was great. I don't know what's wrong with this crowd. And he's like, I know. Like,
but you bombed the whole time. You were going, oh my God, I'm bombing.
Yeah.
This girl is never going to suck my dick again.
First joke that bombed, I was like, oh shit. Second joke that bombed, I was like, I'm done. And then it was kind of like the rest of the set was just me looking down like, I got to stay up here for my time because I can't.
I have seven more minutes where I'm gonna fucking shoot myself.
Yeah, it's
what
like,
am I gonna do during
it's,
this time?
It's actually the second open mic I ever went to where I wasn't performing. It was before when I was trying to get up the courage to perform. I went to like two professional shows and then I went to like two open mics, and I was like trying to like figure out how do you do this comedy thing. And then I finally some comic in Boston. I asked him. Like went up to him like. Like, it was a fucking job fair. And I was like, how do I do what you do? And he's like, have you done a show yet? I was like, no. He's like, then why? Just do it. He was like, stop being a pussy. Like, just go up. So, but I went to an open mic. Actually, at the show where I talked to the guy who told me to stop being a pussy and just do it. Stop
then
wasting
he was
time.
Hey, the next guy, Mikey Swenson. Yeah, stop being a pussy. Start being funny.
I wish, because I probably would have started like, you know, 2 months earlier than I did. But what I did see is I saw this guy. I talked to him and his girlfriend before the show because I was like trying to just like anybody who had the guts to go up there. I was like, you must be some kind of Yoda figure. Like, let me ask you all the questions I have. So, like, I was talking to him, and it was funny because, like, his girlfriend was super into him, and, like, it's like looking at him all doe eyed, and he was, like, fielding questions about stand up, like, he really knew what he was doing. He gets on stage, he was, like, fifth on the night. Gets on stage, does, like, 1.5 jokes with his girlfriend filming and smiling and, like, all that shit. Both of them bomb, and he runs off stage. I never, it was at, it's not there anymore, but it was Dick Doherty's Beantown Comedy Vault is where that happened in Boston, and right on Boylston Street, right downtown. And and it was the great part about it was like I saw it like kind of it was like refreshing, and I was like this guy who I thought was really good, like I was like I could do that shit. I could feel. Yeah. And then he had like this hot girlfriend who was still totally into him after the show, and was like, oh, you tried. And it was like, she was like super like actually just proud of him for like, and then they were like laughing about how he ran off stage and shit, and he was like, but he was super nervous and jittery and all that. And he wasn't fucking even close to funny as I remember. I mean, he ran off stage, so how funny could it be? But that like was inspiring to me, and it was like after I saw that, and I was like, okay. And then I talked to the older veteran comic guy who killed, and he was like, just stop being a pussy, just do it. And he really like looked at me like, why are you even talking to me? He's like, you haven't even done comedy ever. Like, what? Just try it.
Look, that guy's getting his dick sucked, and he was awful on stage. What do you think is gonna happen?
So I literally signed up for the 2 months from then open mic, because the month later was booked, all booked up, and I signed up, and then I had 2 months of like sweating when I was like going to sleep. I'd just like, and then I'd wake up in the middle of the night and try to write a joke, which ultimately was not funny at all. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing, man. I heard that too in my first couple years doing comedy. They're like, everything you're doing right now is you're not gonna keep it. And I didn't believe him at all. I was like, what, this jerk off joke, this porn joke is gonna kill or blah blah blah. And it's like, it did okay at the time, which was like the best I'd ever done, so I thought it was great. And then like now looking back on it, like there's some jokes I haven't told in forever that I used to think were like for sure going on like my first special. I was like, I would have submitted them to fucking
Conan.
Yeah, whoever.
I'm going to be on Conan. You'll see. You'll see.
One day.
I'll be on Conan.
All right. I got to pee. All
right.
Right now, Eric is in the bathroom. He has no idea I'm recording this. But I want everybody to know. I don't know what I want everybody to know. I just don't want Eric to know that I recorded this. What should I say about him? Should I say he's got a fucking... His beard makes me think that he was super religious when he grew up. But who knows? All right, hopefully he puts this on the internet without editing it. This is how you know that he does no work. If you hear this on the podcast, he does no work on it.
I also have some other plugs. Thank you, Mikey Swenson, for being on the podcast.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me.
I want to say also, you know, if this hasn't been clear before, get Theater of the Deranged 2 on Blu-ray. You can order that on Amazon below the thing. So, Theater of the Deranged.
Your blood will turn white. Your face will turn green. Your eyeballs will pop. So terrifying that it is easier to die than to live.
That is one of the most retarded things I've ever heard.
Welcome to Theater of the Deranged 2. I'm your host, big-time internet psychic celebrity, Damien Shadows.
What the fuck?
I notice after watching the short films in this anthology that they're nothing short of audiovisual conjuring spells.
Say your goodbyes, for soon you may be up in the skies.
Mine about it.
Leave him alone, Cheeky!
Now, this is the weirdest date I've ever been on.
Do what to do, made a hit with a girl. They had their hair bobbed and gave him the curls. Oh, how he blew. That do what to do, what to do.
Theater of the Deranged 2. The whole world's a stage.
On Amazon, you can get the Blu-ray.
What about the first one?
It comes out with trauma. The first one kind of sucks. Don't worry about that.
Jesus.
So I play a character called Damien Shadows.
I knew your beard was fucking super weird, religious, magical fucking shit.
Well, yeah. So Damien...
Just called that.
Damien Shadows will explain to you all the entities that are in your house based on watching Theater of the Deranged, all the short films that are in it, and how to get rid of these entities or to use them to your... like, if maybe the entity can possess you and give you superpowers. Whoa. So maybe you want that.
Well, hold on.
Whoa.
Hold on a second. That's some fucking white people slavery double talk there. It's like, possess you and give you superpowers. Like, it's gonna inhabit your body and make your true...
You see, tapeworms make you lose weight. So exactly. I'm saying they're a parasite... But maybe they're, like, eating all the junk food
right,
that you're
so eating. Right, so if you ever really need to axe murder a bunch of people.
Tapeworms.
Yeah.
Okay, so just what I'm saying, the biggest point I can say about that is buy Theater of the Deranged 2
on
Blu-ray on Amazon.
I'm doing it.
All right, second of all, I'm going to be at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles.
29th?
The 29th of December, and I will defeat Eric Wargo via brutal roast jokes.
We hope, because if you don't, man, it's going to be on a blog.
It's going to make me look like shit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to really try hard to destroy his entire character.
Mm-hmm.
Mikey Swenson is going to be in New Jersey at Point Pleasant on July 2016.
July 13th, my birthday. I haven't booked the show. I don't have any of the material.
But it will all come together. It will coalesce in Point Pleasant, New Jersey.
At Jenkinson's, where they will not let me do comedy for sure. I'll just set up a speaker. Actually, one of my friends who I met, who was traveling across the country, his name's Elvis Mujic, fucking great guy. He was living in his van / with other people, just doing comedy all the time. Like, that's all he did. It's all he did. He had, like, no real expenses besides, like, you know, food and gas and shit like that. And then he just did comedy.
I met Elvis. Yeah, I know.
Elvis came through here, through New Orleans, mm-hmm. and he was all around here. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, the thing he's coming out with, right? He's doing it's called the Waffle House Tour.
Yeah. He literally just walks into Waffle Houses and like bumfuck random places in the South and just brings a amplifier and then just has a show. And then I think he was just doing it where he would just walk in and just start doing a show. And then sometimes he would like get kicked out and just do it in the parking lot. And then a bunch of people would like come out of the Waffle House and like, I don't know, that's like hardcore comedy. That's like hard. That's like real deal. Like pure. That's purest, serious, purest stand-up comedy right there. And I respect it, man. Big ups to Elvis for sure.
So no matter what happens, July 13th, 2016.
Yeah, that's right. I'm gonna be busting into Jenkinson's. Those guys will not put up with that shit though. The South is polite enough to tell you to leave there. They'll just fucking pick you up.
So you're thinking throw you in the ocean. New Jersey, Point Pleasant, Dairy Queen, they'll be like, get the fuck out of here.
Probably, man. I hope so. If they're not, I would lose all my faith in
if Jersey. You're gonna have to see what their dick tastes like.
Yeah, exactly.
And hopefully they've been eating a lot of vanilla.
Yeah. Seriously.
All right. Well, this has been episode 144 of Highway Diary with my guest, Mikey Swenson, my big friend.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, man. Anything you want to leave the people with? We've kind of like tore up your whole life. We've really got to the
roots. I guess it's funny because like I just haven't had anything in my life going on that I needed to like express, you know what I mean? Or not express, I don't want to sound like a fucking
ultimately
piece of garbage artist person, but yeah, but ultimately maybe I needed to have some shit go down so I don't feel like such a boring person with no stories. Maybe that's what it was.
So
it was
you just went on a crack adventure because you're like, you know, I haven't really fucked off enough.
Yeah, basically. I don't know. It's like it's been for the last
fuck it
for the last 5 years. I've been doing horrible shit that I feel bad about, and then somehow coming up with some kind of decent story about it. But the funny thing is, those stories never really make it. And maybe that's what I should work on is my stories for my hour that will be at Jenkinson's Boardwalk Pavilion down at the Jersey Shore, Point Pleasant, New Jersey. You don't know where that is.
I'm trying to sell fucking hamburgers. Why don't you get the fuck out of here, Mikey Swenson?
Exactly. I'll be like, I know the struggle, dude. Sell those hamburgers. Like, is that Boston? I'm like, I don't even fucking know anymore, dude. Who knows anymore, dude? Shit.
Yeah. Has anyone accused you of being Jewish for having a Jersey accent in Louisiana?
Yeah, no. In Texas, I've been accused of being Jewish a lot.
That happens to me every single day. I'm like, I'm just from New Jersey. I'm not Jewish.
Well, in Louisiana. You look kind of Jewish. It's just my big nose. You sound a little Jewish.
It's just my big nose. Just a man.
And I don't know. I'd believe your name. Your last name is Jewish, right?
It's German.
That's the same thing. They sorted all that out. They were trying to kill all the Jews. It's all been sorted out.
It's been sorted out. I think some Jews are still sore about that whole Holocaust situation, you know?
Yeah, well, they're the ones who probably made up the whole story, because I don't believe it for a second.
You know what I mean? The bankers. All right, that's another episode of Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks, my guest, Mikey Swenson.
Thank you, man.
All right, later.